You can get into accusations of racism for pointing to foreign hostile states that are attacking our citizens in Canada. But the real issue here, the corruption issue, is Canada has turned a blind eye to Iranian guard tycoons, to CCP organized crime operatives that are working with the PLA or the Ministry of Public Security. Our officials in Canada, some of our business leaders, are benefiting from the corruption of allowing people. Maybe they thought that, you know, these people were just here to, you know, buy wineries in BC. But no, these people that I'm concerned with, not because of where they're from, but because of their activity, are involved in the strategic corruption of Canadian institutions and politicians. And that's the real problem here.
Can I ask you a challenging question about your reporting?
You can. I'll give you my best answer and not get mad at you.
The narrative that we have from the reporters who've been breaking stories on this is that they're getting their information, Sam, you're getting your information from leakers at CSIS, who we know very little about. The Globe and Mail published a piece, I suppose, written by one of them, in which the leaker said, this is why I'm doing it. To paraphrase, it's out of noble patriotic motivations. The Trudeau's not doing enough. The government's not doing enough. We've been warning them and warning them. And they don't heed our warnings, so we are leaking this to put pressure on the government. And I guess that's possible. And a lot of the stories that come out certainly back that up, that Trudeau was warned about this network that India was setting up and didn't do anything. That's one narrative. But I'm aware from the history of national security reporting in Canada that there's another narrative that I think has some credibility, which is that law enforcement and the intelligence community are constantly taking the position that the federal government is not giving them enough money, not giving them enough power, and not doing enough about all of the threats. They're in the threat business. If we're not threatened, they're out of work. And they have another motivation to scare the hell out of Canadians about this stuff. And given the fact that they're leaving you in a position where, if I ask you, I'm not going to be so rude as to ask you about your sources, but like, I don't know how many of them you have or who they are. And it leaves us in a position of trying to understand this stuff with really hazy, broad strokes. We can't really say who did what to who and where and when. But we have to take your word on it that you have sources that know what they're talking about, and that we have to take their word on it, even though we don't know who they are. And so a lot of the reporting is met with skepticism, and it can kind of take on the shape of kind of a phantom menace. We don't really know what's going on, but it sounds very dangerous and scary. And on the extreme end of it, I know you've been accused of, you know, anti-Chinese racism. I want to know what's going on. We don't get the kind of information that just came out from American media when it comes to the assassination that took place there. We don't get the names. We don't know exactly what's happening. So it's hard to know which of those narratives to put the most credibility in.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's an extremely fair question. And a couple points. We don't have the names and we don't have the evidence in Canada because we don't have those unsealed indictments. Leaning on the fox hunt.
What is the fox hunt? Yeah.
The fox hunt is Beijing's covert operations of using organized crime actors, using people from their security apparatus, either sent in under false, you know, business visas or tourist visas into the United States or Canada to do these covert operations targeting American Chinese people or Canadian Chinese people. They could be dissidents, etc. In America, the fox hunt, we now have cases that are proven by a jury in New York City, convicted some people used as proxies by the Chinese state to target fellow American citizens. These citizens said, we're going to protect you. You're on our soil. Okay, so in Canada, I'm asking for some credibility that people in the intelligence community, not just Canada, have been reaching out to me saying that Canada is a playground for hostile state activity. It happens to be from Iran, China, and Russia, most seriously, also India, as we're finding out. And they have trusted me and said, you're not only going to tell the truth, you're going to protect my identity. So, Jesse, I'm going to tell you something right here. You know, I do an assessment of the people and why they come forward. If I think they have, you know, personal career motivations. You know, they didn't get that promotion from someone in the Canadian government, and they're pissed off, and that's why they're leaking. I'm not going to publish. Remember, I was called as a Canadian citizen to testify this summer about what I knew about the targeting of politicians in Canada by China. This is a very important issue. I answered the call of duty. I went and testified. And a couple of days later, RCMP national security investigators knocked on my door, badge in hand, and they gave me what's called an official, legally authorized duty to warn that they had come across concerning activity about something that could happen to me because of my reporting on China.
Hold on. What does that mean? That they have a duty to warn you that who might harm you?
I'm just the latest reporter in Canada that has essentially been told your reporting about what China's doing in Canada could expose you to some dangerous things. Take some precautions.
Sam, since leaving Global, you've done something pretty unique. In fact, I think it's just singularly unique. I think it's the only dedicated news organization in Canada that is exclusively about reporting on this issue. So far, it's a one-man shop that is dedicated, laser-focused on foreign interference in Canada, and you are providing this service to paying readers and listeners. How is that going?
First of all, it's going well. I'm up approaching 6,000 subscribers on the email list now. That's within 6 months of operation. And you're right that it is hyper-focused on this foreign interference story. And I just think that's because I've judged that I'm a leader on this, and it's so important and so timely and relevant that we have this interference inquiry, which I have reported has pretty major holes in it by just focusing on the 2019 and 2021 federal elections, whereas I've reported municipal races, party leadership contests, provincial races are being allegedly interfered with. So I have to keep reporting and say, you know, hey, there's a lot more going on, and it's going well.
It seems like you got like a tiger by the tail here, and this is the everything story, because as we learn more and more about it, and as it's sort of independently verified by other news reports and court proceedings, it feels like the everything story that yes, it's political, but it also has to do with crime, it also has to do with drugs, it also has to do with international terrorism, and it also has to do with Canada's economy and how bound up it is in the real estate business. Sam, thanks for talking with me about it.
Thank you.
That's your Canada Land. Listen, we're all about tradition, and our annual holiday tradition is to tell stories about journalists and media workers who were forced to work over Christmas. It's an annual tradition called Christmas in the Newsroom, and every year we add new anecdotes. Do you have one? Send it to me at jesse@canadaland.com. You can email me there for anything you want me to read. I read them all. Our website is canadaland.com, where you can sign up for a newsletter that will tell you everything we publish each week. In case you don't catch all of our podcasts, the newsletter is invaluable. Our senior producer is Bruce Thorson. Tristan Capicchione is our audio editor and technical producer. Our managing editor is Annette Ajofor. Our editor-in-chief is Karen Pugliese. I'm your host, Jesse Brown. Our theme music is by So-Called, syndications handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it.
Drew Anderson, Prairie's reporter for the Narwhal, alum of two Calgary Weeklies, RIP, and real-life denizen of that city. Welcome to Shortcuts.
Thanks for having me.
Today on the show, the moment that we first left Danielle Smith all alone on the act of sovereignty. I'm Jonathan Goldsby, and this is Shortcuts, where we talk shit about the news.
Just moments ago, Alberta tabled a bill to invoke the Alberta Sovereignty Act.
Danielle Smith is planning to use the controversial Alberta Sovereignty Act.
Alberta is invoking its Sovereignty Act.
The Alberta Sovereignty Act is a very spicy law.
With a resolution calling Ottawa's plan to bring provincial electricity grids to net zero by 2035 harmful to Alberta.
Alberta's government is committed to protecting Albertans from federal overreach.
Alberta government is choosing to bypass the legislature on a number of issues.
So I host a show called Wag the Dog about the Premier of Ontario, the forces that drive him, what he does with that power, and what that means for the rest of us. But I often wondered if Alberta would be more conducive to such a show, you know, provincial affairs by way of, I don't know, amateur psychoanalysis, by way of character portrait, by way, because with, you know, Danielle Smith now or Jason Kenney previously, it's really hard to think of them and what they're doing and how they're taking the province without, I guess, without thinking of them as people, as characters, and considering them in the context of their own history. These days, Smith is freaking out about the federal government's clean electricity regulations, which aim for the country's electricity grid to have net zero emissions by 2035. And in response, she's invoked for the first time the Sovereignty Act, or the officially the Alberta Sovereignty within a United Canada Act, which is kind of like the way I would explain is like if the notwithstanding clause is like a hole created in the Constitution of Canada by design, Alberta's Sovereignty Act is like a little post-it note scrawled on a post-it note attached to the Constitution that sort of says, like, maybe we can get around something if we do something. And so she is basically trying to, or threatening to, or invoking the idea of messing around with Confederation as such in order to protect the rights of companies to continue to have emissions longer than they would otherwise have. So before we get into the media criticism of it, I think we should just talk about, like, how would you describe what is the deal?
Oh, that's an easy one. I think, you know, especially if you're looking at this from the outside and maybe don't really understand what Alberta's all about, it might seem confusing and all over the place. And all these different pieces that are coming in here, we're just fighting with Ottawa left, right, and center. But it is all basically one thing. And it is that Alberta, as, you know, an energy powerhouse that really, I mean, our fortunes sink and swim on the price of a barrel of oil. And it is all of it together, the government trying to protect that industry that they think is not only the thing that has given us our wealth in the past, but that is going to give us our wealth in the future, and telling the government to butt out of it. It makes good politics because Albertans love to fight with Ottawa, but it also, according to them, according to this government, this is sort of how we maintain our standard of living, our way of life. And so you look at everything from the Sovereignty Act to threats to withdraw from the CPP, all of it. It is all just a strategy to try and retain control and power and decision-making authority related to fossil fuel development.
The Sovereignty Act in particular, my understanding, so typically if a province or the federal government contends that an issue is outside the jurisdiction of one government or another, that is to say, if the federal government has possibly waded into affairs that are under the constitutionally the jurisdiction of the provinces, or sometimes vice versa, you typically would go to a court to come up with, you know, go through the court system to come up with a ruling, sort that out, and come up with basically like, oh no, this is ultra vires. This in fact is outside your powers. This is unconstitutional by that respect. This sort of in the way that the, you know, the notwithstanding clause is allows a provincial legislature or the federal House of Commons to, with a majority vote, simply opt out as many provisions of the charter. The idea here with the Sovereignty Act seems to be that a simple majority of the Alberta legislature can itself declare a piece of federal legislation unconstitutional by way of, like, you're butting into Alberta affairs in an inappropriate way, and therefore provincial entities, I mean, they can do a few things, but basically provincial entities don't have to follow it. This is a little more complicated, but is that essentially correct?
That's essentially it. I mean, with the giant missing context of the fact that this doesn't actually do anything. I mean,
yeah.
This is, you know, the notwithstanding clause is the notwithstanding clause. That,
yes,
is in the Constitution.
That's a real thing.
The Sovereignty Act is political theater. It is nothing more than that. It has no legal weight, really. You can't just tell someone to ignore federal laws. and expect to get away with it just because you say it's a nice thing to do. And even with the invocation recently, where they say, you know, with the CER, we're going to invoke the Sovereignty Act and tell people not to follow it. They also say, don't break the law. So, I mean, even in the announcement, they're saying that what we're telling you to do, you should not do. This thing was drafted right from the beginning to be unconstitutional, and they know it.
I mean, that does seem to be you're saying, you know, you can't do something that and expect to get away with it. But I think a lot of governments these days, maybe it's, I don't know how far back it goes. Certainly, I first noticed with the Harper Conservatives, but it doesn't seem an uncommon mode of governing or attempting to govern. It's like, let's do something that may or may not be constitutional and sort of see how far we can get with it and see what effects that has. And, you know, there have been many good explainers about this. I really liked the one that Aaron Wary wrote for the CBC. Aaron Wary, I always think, like, the first time I ever saw his byline was for a review of a Panic at the Disco album. I can't remember what year that was. But he had a piece, just an online piece called Daniel Smith Wants a Fight Over Climate Policy, Whether We Need It or Not. But I guess other than the pieces that are direct explainers, how do you find journalists or reporters have been, like, how do you cover all of these, I don't even just nuances, but, like, how do you cover all of these different little explanations in the span of a single news story? Is there a nut graph that explains that she's doing the Sovereignty Act, but, oh, it's probably nothing?
Well, that's a challenge. I mean, you know, you look at the CBC and what they're doing with analysis is really powerful, especially in these kinds of contexts, because it does allow for that voice to come in and that explanation. When you're doing a straight news story, it gets a little bit more challenging because you can get lost in the weeds real fast. I think, in general, the media here is pretty savvy and has done a fairly good job from the mainstream publications right on down of sort of, you know, calling it out for what it is. And I think right from the beginning, even when they were just sort of musing about the Sovereignty Act, people were calling it out. We're saying, you know, this is theater. And even the people that created this idea said that it was intentionally unconstitutional. So I think, you know, Alberta media in general has been pretty good about being sort of clear-eyed about this. But I think, like anything, when we're talking about media and coverage, I mean, things get lost in the weeds, simple coverage, headlines, things that sort of like come and go quickly, you know, the wrong lead that just kind of focuses on the sensation rather than the meat of the matter, and a headline that does the same. And next thing you know, you've got misinformation spreading faster than you can explain it away.
If I understand this correctly, she alleged that if oil company executives could potentially be incarcerated if the clean energy regulations were not complied with by 2035?
Yeah. Yeah, that's sort of a favorite one of hers, is to suggest that, you know, someone that's operating a natural gas plant that doesn't have the right amount of CCUS attached to it is going to be, you know, let off in handcuffs by some sort of federal climate force.
I mean, my reactions to that, I guess, are number one, like, I wish. Two, generous way to look at it is she's overly optimistic as to the degree to which any emissions targets are ever enforced anywhere. Mm. And three, she's also overly optimistic about the frequency with which people in suits are put in prison in Canada.
Valid points.
But she said, but she says that a lot. Like I knew she's, but she, is that, that's a favorite of hers?
Yeah, she's said that right from the very beginning. I mean, as soon as they said that, you know, this was something that, like, you know, you don't want to be on the wrong side of the law. And because of the way that it is drafted, it is actually, you know, there are elements of the criminal code involved in it. And she basically extrapolated that to say that there's going to be jail time for these CEOs. And she uses those sort of pressure points to sort of, you know, make her points. And one thing that we haven't talked about with her latest declaration to use the Sovereignty Act for this stuff is the other side of that, which is, okay, and you have to understand in Alberta, we're talking about private power producers here. You know, everybody else across Canada has their crown corporations, you know, BC Hydro, Sask Power. In Alberta, we don't have that. We have a private market for electricity. So she's telling, you know, basically the CEOs of independent private corporations with natural gas plants, we don't want you to follow federal regulations, which they're legally obligated to do. And then on the flip side, she said, that might freak you out a little bit, so we're going to explore nationalizing this stuff. We're going to create a crown corporation, or at least look at the possibility of creating a crown corporation to buy your natural gas plants if you don't want to operate them, or build our own. And that's astounding.
That is amazing. I mean, yeah, it's tempting to make this all just all about like a general Danielle Smith thing. But I guess, who do you think has gotten the closest to explaining what's going on in her mind?
You know what? I think Jason Markusoff at CBC does a pretty good job, formerly of Maclean's. He does analysis for CBC Calgary. And that allows him, you know, a little bit of freedom and a little bit of personality to seep in there. And he's got a long history of knowing who Danielle Smith is, being around her. I'm sure that they were working at the Herald at the same time, even when she was a columnist. So, you know, he's got a lot of insight and a lot of history to sort of back up some of these things and looking at what shapes her and what shapes her thinking. And so I think he's done a really good job of that. And then I think there's all other, you know, like hard news sort of reporters that have done a good job of sort of digging into some of the cognitive dissonance yeah. that's at play, or some of the sort of blatant struggles with truth that we sometimes see, right? And just sort of like making sure that calling out those factual inaccuracies. And, you know, like Emma Graney from the Globe and Mail comes to mind. She covers energy and electricity, and it has done a really good job of just being like, hold on, that doesn't make any sense. What are we going to do here?
And she is Australian, right? And she used to be at the Journal?
Yeah, exactly. She got into a real throwdown, actually, with Smith at a news conference regarding the renewables pause, which is a whole other schmozzle over here. They've put a 7-month pause on renewable energy projects in the province, and there were some serious contradictions in why what Smith was saying was the reason for doing that versus what we could plainly see.
With all due respect, though, I mean, that's not what you said earlier. You said that this is what they're asking for, and they weren't. But anyway, my next question is...
Well, they did ask for us to do a pause on wind and solar.
Look, the letters. I looked at the letters. That's not what they said. So I'm just saying.
They did.
So when you're also talking about...
Just for the record, okay. They did ask us okay. to put a pause on wind and solar, and that was what I was asking.
Yeah, I know, but not about transmission. Respect. That's my point. And so you're bringing this up as reasoning, and yet it's not, in fact, what they had asked for.
I do find it fascinating just reading the variety of articles about this. Certainly she's not the only politician where journalists have to struggle with, or at least trying to figure out how do you accurately, fairly, even-handedly, and effectively convey the degree of dishonesty, as is often the case. But to do so in the case here in Alberta, in the case of articles that are by and large about energy regulation and clean energy policy, which are not necessarily the easiest things to write about anyway, especially the easiest things to write about in a compelling way, and the amount of information that has to be juggled. I feel like in Ontario, for example, it's one thing to talk about property deals. I feel like that's a fairly easy thing to explain and to help people visualize. But when you're talking about, in the context of an article about emissions targets or about basically legislating emissions targets and regulating carbon output, it sounds like it's quite a steep hill.
Yeah, and that really is the challenge, is these are complex issues. And so if you have politicians, as all politicians do, making quick, snappy, easy talking points, you know, and Danielle Smith and her government, I mean, Danielle Smith is an excellent speaker. She is engaging. She is smart. She knows her audience. I mean, people like her. It's hard not to like her. But she effortlessly plugs in information that is incorrect while she's doing that, but spread throughout a whole lot of truth as well. And she presents it in a really engaging way. And she's not afraid to hit you with real zingers that, you know, is just like red meat for a lot of journalists and columnists. And so when you've got these really simplified talking points mixed in with issues that are difficult to wrap your head around as someone that's deep in it, let alone present that to readers who maybe aren't and generally are not as informed, it's a real challenge. How do you take something complex and pit it against these simple slogans? And, you know, in Alberta, that's particularly true. I mean, the oil and gas industry. Try going through Alberta Energy Regulator documents and let me know how far you get. This stuff is dense and hard to understand and hard to report. Try figuring out Alberta's electricity grid. We have multiple power producers. We have transmissions lines owned by different companies. We have, you know, an independent system operator that's responsible for building the transmission and making sure the lights stay on versus the regulator that oversees the market versus the market service administrator. I mean, it's taken me years to understand just how we make electricity in this province.
I always think that governing must be just so easy if you can just say whatever, not necessarily tethered to the bounds of reality. That's not great for the people being governed. It sounds like it's a delightful way for the people who are governing, but it also is a very challenging environment for journalists to try to find their way around in.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like we can't make stuff up. I can't lie. I can't just print whatever I want. I would rightly be sued, and I would rightly lose my credibility. You know, you saw this down in the States with Trump and the media trying to figure out how to cover him. I don't think we're quite there, but it is hard when you need to sit there and fact check in real time on a constant basis and then make a decision what you press back against and what you don't. Because you can't push back against all of it. It's just impossible. And you'll drive yourself crazy doing it. This government has proved itself difficult when it comes to information. We do a lot of digging at the Narwhal, and part of that is filing a lot of Freedom of Information requests. Noticeable change. The redactions are insane.
Like change from Kennedy to Smith, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
It is a noticeable shift. We've got, you know, the Narwhal through my managing editor, Mike D'Souza, is part of a systemic review. The Globe and Mail is also part of that through the Office of the Information and Privacy Commissioner because it's gotten so bad. I have several complaints and a possible inquiry on the way. You request information, they just redact it as a matter of course and then say, fight me.
And this is true across various ministries and everything?
Yeah. Yeah, it is a real challenge. I don't know why they think that people like me are going to go away if they make it more difficult, but it's not working so far, but it wears you down and it takes up a lot of time. It takes a lot of time and effort to sort of do these things, and I think they know that.
That's Shortcuts for this week. Thanks so much for joining me, Drew, and for explaining Danielle Smith and Alberta and energy regulation to me. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. I feel like I just scratched the surface. So, you know, if you have any more questions, let me know.
You're on Twitter/X at CanadaLand. You can email me at jonathan@canadaland.com. I read everything you send. I also, I'm on Blue Sky these days. It's more pleasant than X. And I co-host Wag the Dog, which is the monthly Ontario politics show at CanadaLand. Where can people find you, Drew?
That's a good question. Social media is such a cesspool these days. I don't really give it out. I guess I'm on X/Twitter still at Drew P. Anderson. Don't ask what the P stands for. It's just nothing. And what am I on Blue Sky? I'm on there too. I am at drewanderson.bluesky.social. So find me there. I'm a little more active in that space.
Oh, wonderful. People can find your writing at thenarwhal.ca. This episode is produced by Aviva Lassard with additional production by Caleb Thompson. Our managing editor is Annette Ajofo. Our editor-in-chief is Karen Pugliese. Theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca.
Witness Cynthia Megaris, who'd had a squelch, give it all away. What does it mean to bear witness? The act of witnessing is also the act of universal acceptance. Giving is intertwined with wealth and abundance, depending on the reciprocal relationship one has with land and community. It is this ideology that has helped indigenous nations maintain sustenance for centuries. Following Thema Egaris, performance at SFE Gallery in fall 2022, who had a squelch, give it all away. Guest participants were invited to recount the event in, as Egaris describes, a collective remembering, a truth about an experience. Listen as participants Tanya Lucan Linklater, Alisa Johnny Hawkins, and Mikhail DeAngeli share their witness encounters together in a conversation airing December 12th and 19th on Speak Up from 10 to 11 a.m.
If you're a Canadian Indigenous student considering many life choices about your future, Inspire can help. If you need ideas about possible education or career path options specifically for First Nations, Métis, and Inuit folks like you, join Inspire's mentorship program, Rivers to Success. It's free to register, and you'll get plenty of up-to-the-minute information about university, college, and vocational trade schools. Most importantly, again, it's free. It's free, it's free, it's free. It's online, and we have monthly events with prizes. Discover the many potential job and study opportunities that are waiting for you across Turtle Island. Register online now at rivers2success.ca. Again, that's rivers2success.ca.